You're listening to the Mental Health and Ministry Podcast. We're your hosts, Austin Brown and Tim Stoner, mental health workers with a background in ministry.
Ministry is messy and presents unique challenges when it comes to addressing issues of mental and emotional health.
This podcast is about equipping ministry workers with a holistic perspective of mental, emotional, and spiritual health. We're glad you're here.
Hey guys, this is Austin. I'm really excited that you're going to get to hear this conversation we recorded with Jenny Herman about grief today on the podcast. We did want to give you a heads up here at the beginning, however, that as Jenny shares some of her own family's history and experience with grief, she does briefly share a story that can be really difficult to hear. So we want to give you guys the opportunity to skip through that if you so choose. The story involves the accidental death of a child that occurs before Jenny's even born. So if you want to skip through that, we invite you to go ahead and listen to the beginning of this podcast. And whenever you get to around 6 minutes and 45 seconds, you can go ahead and skip forward to around 8 minutes and 25 seconds. We hope today's interview is helpful and beneficial to you as you help others, and even as you evaluate your own experience with grief. And we're glad you're here. All right, we are here today. We're talking with Jenny Herman about grief. Jenny, you and I think whenever we first met, you were still doing some work on the university campus with university students through a ministry there. But you also have a background in vocational ministry and missionary work. You were overseas for a time. I don't know how much you want to say about that. I don't know. I actually don't know how long you were overseas and what you would want to say about that.
Yeah, sure. I'll introduce myself and give a little bit of background, and it'll kind of lead into what got me into grief work as well, because my time overseas was a big part of that. So I am, like Austin said, I'm Jenny Herman, and I am a licensed professional counselor and a licensed marriage and family therapist in Berryville, Arkansas. I grew up in this area. It is a small rural area. If you're from this area, there's a little bit of a joke about Carroll County. Green Forest and Berryville on one side, the Kings River, and then Eureka Springs on the other side. And people often say it's Woodstock and livestock. And that really is a convergence of this community. So you see a lot of different things as a therapist.
You're on the livestock
when
side.
When you serve.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm on the livestock side, but I have a lot of Woodstock clients. And so I serve those clients, which is really fun. Never thought I'd move back here. I was gone for 27 years, but my parents' health, we felt called to come back and help them just end well, honestly, and help them on their farm and with their life. And so we've been here about 4 years now. So before that, I was on staff as a group practitioner with the Joshua Center, and also worked for a nonprofit in Fayetteville, Arkansas called Light Bearers. And Light Bearers was an organization that would do discipleship amongst college students in apartment complexes. They would live in these apartment complexes as a house, and there'd be three or four of them that would live in life and community together. But we would use the profits from the apartments to fund projects overseas. And that was my role. I did all the kind of partner development with people overseas and did the project funding. So during that time that I was with Light Bearers, I did a lot of traveling overseas to visit projects and meet with people. And I ended up sitting on the couch and listening to their stories and how hard it was. And so many of them didn't feel like they could talk to their sending church or their sending funder about what was going on, right? Because it didn't feel safe to struggle.
Yeah. Yeah. You can only communicate your successes and the positive news. Yeah.
Really how I got into deciding to go to grad school and become a full-time counselor is really through that work. And then before that, I'd done some overseas work myself. I actually was on a team that went to Central Asia, expected to go for about 10 years, and came back 8.5 years early because of so much trauma and chaos and turmoil that happened. And so that's a part of my grief story too, of just having so much hope and expectation and plans. You know, you sort of burn the ships, and and then come home so quickly was a bit shocking, you know, and had a lot of grief to process through from that. So kind of a little bit of a backward story of me and kind of what I bring to at least the therapeutic practice related to grief and ministry.
Yes. Even as the way you're talking about grief there, it's familiar to me, but it does bring up kind of this idea of even trying to define what grief is. But so often when we talk about grief, it's associated with death almost exclusively. I grew up in a household, my dad's a pastor, and so a rural area, and he would do funerals for people, not just from our church, but from around the community. I remember leaving vacation early because we had to come home because somebody had passed away and he needed to do a funeral. He got called, you know, to do that. And so, so even from my own experience, like the idea of what grief even means is like, that's okay. Grief is something that happens when somebody dies, like, and you have to try and deal with that. Right. Which I think there's some truth to that, but it's a lot, even the way you're talking about it, right. Of like grief dealing with, oh, I had this idea that this is what it was going to look like. I was going to be in Central Asia for 10 years. And then had to come back 8.5 years early. And there's a lot of grief there in that. And so do you have a way that you have found to talk about what grief even is, or how would you put words to that?
Yeah. Okay. Such a good question. And I have to say too, if it's okay,
yes,
that's really my original experience with grief too, is death.
Yeah.
You know, the most significant grief of my life happened 30 years before I was born. Mm-hmm. My grandparents had a child it's a very complex story, but my uncle Jimmy got away from my grandma because he wanted to go help my grandfather in the fields. And my grandfather didn't see him because the wheat was too tall and actually ran over him.
Wow.
And killed him. And my grandparents walked the funeral. My great aunts and uncles packed up my uncle Jimmy's bedroom. Mm-hmm. My grandparents moved houses. Mm-hmm. And never told their other kids they had a child until they found out from someone else.
Wow.
And so this, I saw as a child, you know, my family was very loving, jovial, playful, but underneath, even as a kid, like there was something, you know, I could just tell, like people got mad about crazy stuff, overreacted. You know, it was like there's something here that I see that is not being spoken of, you know, and later as a child learned about, you know, what happened and was never really spoken about that much, in my family. And so that's kind of what I thought grief was.
Yeah.
Like someone dies, you're sad.
Yep.
Right. And so coming into an experience like I had overseas and you go, oh, this is grief. Yeah. Like this is grief too. So, you know, saying all that, you know, kind of my working model now, I just turned 50 this year. So my working model now is it's a response to loss. It's whether it's emotional, physical, psychological, it's how we respond to a loss. That's grief. Mm. And we, I believe, are always losing.
Yeah.
Not everyone agrees with me. I say that sometimes in groups and people are kind of like, I don't know about that.
why do you think that is?
But if you think about it, we're always gaining. I don't, why people respond that way.
Yeah. Why is that something that people naturally push against, do you think?
Lots of reasons, but that we're not always completely in touch with what our losses are.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not grieving, you know, a death or, you know, a disappointment or getting fired or whatever I might say I'm grieving. So we don't naturally, or even as a matter of course in our discipleship as believers, stay connected to our losses. Mm-hmm. Unless they're just like blatant and right in front of us. Mm-hmm. So to say we're always losing, it's like, oh no, we're always gaining, like the hope of heaven, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but we're always losing too. I mean, we're losing time. We're losing ability. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, with every gain, there's a loss. You get married, that's amazing. You've lost some singlehood, and there are losses in that that need to be honored and named and made meaning of in order to be a whole-hearted person, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. I'm like thinking, I'm like, wow, this is so good. So I guess, what ways do you see grief just manifest in people or your clients? I mean, what I think is the most interesting thing about what you said is it seems like the underlying thing is we are not cognizant of our grief, even to the point where people are like, oh, I'm not grieving. But then you're irritable for some reason, or your affect or your emotions inside are sad. I think what's amongst the many profound things you said, the one that sticks out the most to me is that a lot of times we don't realize it. So I guess what ways do you see that grief manifests?
Grief is so unique to each person. I think there's some commonalities that we can see that most of us would say, oh, that's grief, right? It's crying, sadness. But in every person, our story is in that grief. So I agree with you. I think irritability is a big one. That, what am I saying when I'm irritable? This isn't right. This isn't okay. I'm frustrated. That's a loss. That's a grief. Whether it's a grief of my expectation, or this isn't going the way I wanted, or you're disrupting my calm, you know, whatever that is, those are griefs. And there are, you know, I never really thought about it before, and the concept is small g and big g, like you had said, because we all experience our own pain differently.
Yeah.
So how can we rank grief? It's kind of like when people try to rank trauma and they say, oh, well, I don't have as bad as this person. It's like, sure. I mean, that's sort of a moot point, because we all have pain and we all have grief. So from that standpoint, you know, you can see people who really get anxious, really get irritable, people that, you know, their sadness turns to depression. People that get a little platitude-y, you know, like, it's okay. Like, you know, I'll see him in heaven and, you know, it's all right. Like, God has a better job for me around the corner. Like, and there's a little bit of avoidance in their voice. And so, you know, it really does vary.
Yeah. I think a lot of the ways that I saw, as I mentioned before, kind of how I grew up around funerals and death a lot. I think part of the culture and of where I grew up, there was actually a lot of lightheartedness around death and the funeral, like a lot of joking. And I don't know if that's cultural, geographically thing, like geographical thing or what it is, but you don't sit in the heaviness. You don't sit in the sadness. We're going to kind of acknowledge, you know, that we're here. I mean, we're going to make food for you and have a potluck dinner for the family and everything, but we're just going to kind of be lighthearted and make jokes. And, and so, yeah, I think it's interesting how, even in my own mind, like I have this idea of like, oh, grief is sad and cry. But then also my experience is very much when you're around other people, you don't do that. You put on a smile and are really happy. And there's such a disconnection even there. Like if I don't know how to, I think I should be sad. I think it's appropriate to be sad, but I don't even know how to do that with other people in grief. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And, you know, there's such a cultural aspect to that. And, you know, maybe even in your own community, but our society doesn't really know what to do with loss. We're taught how to gain. We're taught how to succeed, how to work hard, but we're not really taught, even as children growing up in our society, I think, you know, we could talk about different cultures, but in general American majority culture, how do you sit with loss and truly mourn and truly name the grief, organize it? How does it change your view of the world, your view of God, your view of yourself and others? there needs to be a reorganization, right? And I think I saw that a lot with workers overseas when I traveled for Lightbearers, that this idea and this experience I had of God is not what I'm experiencing now. And I don't know how to reconcile that. Mm. And that's a grief.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't feel allowed to do that. Mm. And the same thing for you, you know, going to these funerals, if the spouse and the children and the church is not crying, but you want to cry, it's like, well, we don't cry.
Right.
Yeah. You know, all of a sudden there's going to be this one person crying,
yes.
Yeah. You know, it's like going to look really weird.
I think you said something that I wanted to talk about, and that is just culturally how we deal with grief. And like, one exercise I did actually a couple days ago is something called a grief map, where you just write out on a timeline times that you lost something either somewhat or very significant. You know, stuff you wouldn't think is like grieving, but like leaving home to go to college. Like I went to college 9 hours away from where I was at, you know. And yes. I even remember just walking home, or it was a Bible college, but it was like chapel. And I couldn't figure out why, but I just started bawling. I try to maintain the masculine appearance that I was trying to keep at the time. And so I just left as fast as I could and went to my dorm room by myself. And I felt like I didn't understand why. And yeah. Then, you know, everything from like a breakup to my cat passed away. I looked at all these things. I was like, man, I dealt with all of these things by myself. Like I didn't really feel like I was free to say, like, you know what, to you, it may be just a cat, but to me, that was like something pretty big, you know. Mm-hmm. To you, this was just a college relationship, but to me at the time, it was pretty huge and caused a lot of struggle. And I think that's just such an interesting thing, especially what you're saying, Austin, about, you know, you look around the room at the funeral and it's all your church friends and family and they're not crying. And so it's like, well, I can't either. But I think that's so interesting about our culture, is that we feel like we have to grieve quietly and alone. Like it's just a private thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is isolating. And so how do we do that? And how do we invite others into our grief when we may not know if it's safe to do so? You know, how other people respond to our grief. If they miss us, then we learn that we can't trust them. You know, and so it's like it's easier and safer to go grieve alone.
Yeah. And when you say when they miss us, you mean like when they don't really get it. They don't really understand mm-hmm. where we're at, and they don't meet us there in that grief.
Right. Because here's what I would say about grief related to what we're talking about here. It is so slow and low. It is first gear, low first gear park, you know, and we live in a world that operates it at what gear, third to fourth. I mean, we are going, if you have a ministry meeting, it's at a coffee shop for an hour. Like you're not going to process grief at a coffee shop in an hour, you know? And so we don't even create the space in order to grieve culturally.
Yeah.
This isn't true for everybody, and this isn't a criticism of these types of churches, but it is noteworthy to say that if you go to a big church that's got the lights and the music, and we're so excited to see you today, and you know, it's just so up. It's third, fourth gear, right? I mean, how many church services have you gone to where it's like, we're grieving and we're just going to be down here today, and one of our parishioners died, or world events, right? Mm-hmm. That like we are grieving this. And maybe that happened during COVID. I don't know. It wasn't, you know, I'm not in that environment anymore. Being in a rural community, it's very different. Churches are very different, but small group, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, the thing that when you were saying that came to my mind, which just maybe speaks to the truth of what you're saying from my experience, what came to my mind was being on the college campus September 11th of 2001 and how all of the campus ministries came together and we had time that was, there was a lot of grief in those times together and prayer and our, even our worship, right, was, it was heavy. And so I like, that's what I think of when you say that, you know, talk about how often do you walk into the church and you, you have that, but it speaks to, I think, the unfortunate truth behind what you're saying, because that was in 2001 and this is 2023. And that's where my mind goes for what that experience feels like. Yeah. That's the reference point. I haven't had a lot of reference points since then to even call back to. Yeah.
Yeah. Even COVID, where, you know, we're just, we don't know what's going on. There's just a lot of disillusionment and you're grieving what, you know, the normalcy of life of just being able to go out on a regular basis. And actually, I remember I was listening to a Third Eye Blind song and it was called Losing a Whole Year. Like, I was listening to it and I was like, that is just what happened. Like, it feels like we lost a whole year. We lost a year to be with people. We lost a year to just to enjoy life. But yeah, even just grieving that in general. But as a culture, I mean, I feel like that's something that we all, you know, experience together. But yeah, I think that was my public grief moment.
To tie together some things that were said, the manifestations that can come out, and we talked about like irritability and that sort of, and so you just kind of see what a lot of the energy around what was lost through COVID and the way that that's been handled. I think you can see that a lot, the anger and the frustration and putting energy into things that before COVID you probably would have never put energy into, you know, whether it's, you know, how we talk about politics and, and that sort of thing.
Golly, I never thought about that.
So I'm curious though, because as we're talking about this, it almost could sound like you're just supposed to be sad and things are supposed to be heavy all the time. So I don't think we believe that. So I guess the two big questions, what does it look like to be on the other side in a healthy, healed place? And then out of that, maybe we can talk a little bit about what that process to get there looks like too.
What does undealt with grief look like, or grief that hasn't been dealt with?
Sort of unresolved grief.
That's the word. Thank you. Undealt is not a word. Unresolved grief.
Unresolved grief consumes a tremendous amount of energy. It will dictate fearful choices and protective choices around every bend. Right. So if I haven't grieved, which means honoring the hurt, the pain, reorganizing my understanding and my experience and my view of God, the world, myself, then I have this space within me that is being undealt with. So I start to protect it so I don't have to go to these hard places. And it looks different for different people. You will see a lot of isolation, maybe some arrogance. Embittered, you know, either that thing or that person that I lost is like the worst person ever or the best person ever. It's like we almost enshrine them or bedevil them or the thing, right? Whatever the loss is. The dream. That was the best thing that ever could have happened to me, or I didn't want it anyway. Right.
Yeah.
Maybe some comparison, you know, like we've talked about, like, well, we have the hope of heaven. We have Jesus, or I guess that's more like projection, like future stuff. But the comparison would be, oh, it's not as bad as those people. You know, I know we've all heard somebody goes on a trip overseas and they come back and say, what? We're so blessed. Right. And really what they're saying is, I don't know what to do with the pain that I saw and experienced. That's really what you're saying there. And so that unresolvedness over time will compound. And the thing I see the most in relationships and probably in clients, but definitely in relationships, is overreactions. You know, the reaction doesn't really match what happened here. And so, you know, there's some history. There's some history, some unresolved grief there. And I think that can be categorized as that embitteredness and anger.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I feel like we as a culture will try to medicate grief. It's like if the dog passes away, it's like, oh, we'll just go out and get you another dog. You know, you lose a job, let's go out to eat. You know, like there's all sorts of ways that we medicate grief as opposed to dealing with it.
Yeah, that's a good point, Tim. I mean, that's an addition, right? Like that's an addition of the things I said, medicating it.
Yeah.
You know, if you see someone or if you notice you are doing a lot of medicating.
Yeah.
Whether it's food or entertainment or work or shopping or helping others, you know, there's a medication happening there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You use the phrase a few different times and I just happened to think we should probably expound on that. When you talked about dealing with grief, you said to name it, to honor it, and then to organize it. Like organizing it is important. And so I'm wondering if you can just kind of lay that out a little bit. What does it mean to organize grief?
There's many facets to it. So when we organize grief, then we're really naming all the parts. And so we live in such a, I think it's human nature. I think it's culture, but we do live in a place and a state as a country and as a people of black or white. It's this or it's that. And grief is, and trauma and a lot of other things, but we're talking about grief. Grief is more complex than that. So to organize it means I'm going to name all the aspects of the loss. If I can use a death example, I have a client, husband died very suddenly, and people would say, oh, you were married X number of years, and here's the loss, right? Your husband died, you've lost your partner. But they'd been together since they were preteens. There were aspects of their relationship that she really relied on him. All her family is already dead. Like, you know, it's just, there's so many aspects of the grief. So we're organizing it. We're naming all the parts of the loss in order to really honor her grief, to honor the relationship, but also to help her know how to move forward. If she doesn't name all those losses and figure out what all those losses are, she doesn't really know where to put them. Where do they go? Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah.
So when we have the death of something, dream, job, relationship, whatever, well, there was an attachment to that. Mm. Otherwise, it wouldn't hurt.
Yep.
And that attachment doesn't just dissipate. It has to be understood and organized and moved, not necessarily somewhere else, because I think there's ways to honor that attachment, even though it's not still there. But if we don't name it and honor it and organize it, it's left languishing, and we will continue to be in a disorganized pain that we can't get out of.
So I'm wondering, do you, like when you're seeing your clients, it sounds like what you want them to do is just to grasp the magnitude of the grief that they're experiencing or the magnitude of the loss.
Yeah. And I think that goes to what you were asking, Austin, about how do we live in both? Like, how do we both have the hope and the joy and have the grief? And that's exactly what you're saying, Tim. It's like when I've never seen somebody actually be able to name and organize the grief that stayed stuck there. They are then able to move toward hope and joy and purpose because now they know what the loss was, what meaning it is in their lives, and what to do with it going forward. It may take a while to figure out what to do with it, but it frees them to explore.
Yes. It's hard to put all of this into words because I think, what just came to my mind was a story that somebody had shared with me. This, you know, not a client story or anything, but just about fostering a child and getting to essentially give this child their first ever Christmas with presents. You think about this child has never really had and experienced Christmas as a really fun, joyous thing where, you know, there's family and there's presents. And so wanting to make this a really awesome thing and the temptation to like really lavish the child with gifts and that sort of thing, almost as if to redeem all the previous years that the child didn't get. And the thing is that's not really how it works. I mean, it makes sense that we would want to do that, right? But the fact is always going to be, it's always going to be true that that child did not have those Christmas experiences for the first several years of their life, right? And so that doesn't mean that we have to sit down and, you know, remember that and be sad about it and have a long conversation about it every year. It also doesn't mean that we ignore it and just try to, like, give extra gifts and give extra attention every year to try and make up for it. No, we need to figure out how to continue to hold both, right? How do we incorporate that story into our experience now? You know, acknowledge that did have meaning and it is sad and maybe does have an effect on how they think about the holidays and how they experience the holidays. And, you know, we take that into account, but we do so and we move forward by involving them now into our family, involving them into our traditions and hopefully having it become something that's really positive.
I love that. And in that, releasing that child to make meaning on their own with some guidance, right? But we can't force onto that child, well, now Christmas is good.
Yes.
You know, and now you've got all these gifts. Like, they are going to have both those experiences and integrate them together into their story. And Christmas may always have a little bit of bitter and a little bit of sweet.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Or some years really sweet and some years really bitter.
That's right.
And that we just are there to support and guide and love rather than, okay, now we're going to redeem your experience.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I was wondering about this because especially talking with clients, like I almost feel bad saying we're going to move past your grief. Like I guess like in some ways, like I feel for my loved ones, you know, to say I'm moving past my grief is to say I'm forgetting about you. And can you help me just reconcile that thought process? Like what's a good way to, I guess, think about it? What's a good way to talk about, do we necessarily get over our grief? Yeah.
Yeah. I would say we don't get over grief and we don't get past it, but we are able to live with it, to have joy through it, to organize it into who we are. It doesn't necessarily have to have level 10 power over us. Every day can feel a little bit different, or every week or every month, but it really is integrating grief into our life rather than it becoming this thing we deal with and move on / move forward. Yeah.
Listening to the Mental Health and Ministry Podcast. This episode contains one part of an ongoing conversation. Look for the continuation in a subsequent episode. The conversations had and material presented on the Mental Health and Ministry Podcast is for informational and educational purposes and is not a substitute for professional therapy or professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Incidental music is "O Love That Will Not Let Me Go," arranged by Caleb Paxton, recorded by St. Paul Worship Collective.
If you know someone who would benefit from this podcast, please pass it along. And feel free to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Ministry and Mental Health is a podcast from Identity and Purpose, PLLC.
Thanks for listening.